Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Do you want to meet myself and Ollie Davis of Wrestle Ramble fame? Well, you can do just that by joining us at Wrestling Media Con on September 8th and 9th from the Bowlers Exhibition Centre in Manchester, England. Ollie and I will be doing a live episode of Wrestle Ramble as well as signings and photos, but that's not all. Wrestling Media Con will have shows from Cultaholic, Inside the Ropes, Wrestling with Regret, Don Callis, Botchamania, Art of Wrestling, Sean Waltman, and more. There will also be the first ever Wrestling Media Hall of Fame and wrestling shows from Impact Wrestling, where they will be taking on the best the UK has to offer, and Revolution Pro Wrestling featuring the legendary Jushin Thunder Liger defending his British J Cup crown. Tickets are on sale now, so head over to WrestlingMediaCon.com. That's WrestlingMediaCon.com.
Support WrestleTalk.
Give us a subscribe.
Making their way to the ring at a combined weight of undeniably sexy, hailing from London, the Wrestle Ramble Podcast!
Hello and welcome to the Wrestle Ramble Podcast. I'm Ollie Davis, yeah, I'm back, no more fake door, and I'm joined by Luke Owen.
Hello, Swerp Nation, and a hello to you, Oliver Davis. Obviously, people would have heard your voice yesterday on the SummerSlam Predictions episode, if you've listened to that. But welcome back to the intros and outros.
Hey, did you do an intro and outro with Laurie for that?
We did indeed, yes.
That, check you guys
that
out.
Is how we got onto the topic of Dungeons and Dragons. We did it in the outro segment. I didn't think to do it in the intro, because you don't want to just turn people off.
No, but it's a wrestling podcast.
Exactly. So we thought we'd talk about it a little bit in the outro. We ended up talking the whole 10 minutes about our Dungeons & Dragons campaign.
Well, I'm glad as soon as I left, you didn't just turn it into a Dungeons & Dragons channel and podcast. No. You waited until the outro.
Exactly,
that's good.
Yeah. But reaction to it seemed to be quite positive. People really enjoyed it. You know, in fact, I actually got an email here from Jared Conister, who said... really appreciate a good appropriate time of the day, Luke, Laurie and Ollie. Luke, Laurie and Ollie. That is harder to say than I thought it would be.
Luke, Laurie and Ollie.
Yeah, well, yeah. Luke, Ollie, Laurie.
Luke, Ollie and Laurie.
Yeah.
It's and like we're children's TV presenters.
But he sent in, like, his own Dungeons and Dragons stories, which I'm going to save for the outro.
Cool.
Because where...
I mean, I'm not really going to know... what's going on.
But it's a fun story. It's like the story I told you when I fell over on the ball bearings.
Okay, well, yeah, that's objectively funny.
Yeah. But where were you yesterday? Why the heckins were you not? When I say yesterday, I mean Wednesday. Why?
Yes.
Where were you on Wednesday?
I had to go and do some business stuff. Exciting development, folks. I might have got us a new studio.
Hey!
Hey!
That wasn't really what I was getting at, though.
Oh, okay.
I was getting at where you went in the evening.
Okay, I went to Secret Cinema.
Ooh.
Ooh, Romeo and Juliet, or Romeo plus Juliet equals Soppy Ollie. That's what happened. At Secret Cinema, if you don't know, is a huge, immersive theatre and cinema thing that happens about 3 times a year. And they just create these, that they're like take over an entire building, in this case, a large park, and they'll build the set of a movie, and you can walk around in it. They did Blade Runner earlier this year, and you walked into what felt like the murky Chinese-influenced downtown streets of Blade Runner, complete with rain.
Wow.
Rain indoors. Like, they said bring an umbrella. I thought, I'm not falling for that merch trick again. I'm not going to buy your expensive umbrella. I got soaked. I got soaked inside because they had rain like that. But it was amazing. And this one was recreating Verona in Los Angeles, which is where Romeo plus Juliet is set, which is Baz Luhrmann's 1996 reimagining of the classic Shakespeare play.
With young Leo.
Leo
DiCaprio.
Oh, he's got floppy hair. His hair is at max flop.
Because this is like Titanic era Leo.
So I think it's the year before. Titanic's 97.
I seem to remember them coming out at the same time.
Maybe they did.
Yeah, it could be. Like, I'm willing to admit that I was wrong on that, but I seem to equate those eras of Leo as very much the similar thing. So obviously when I looked at it, I was like, oh, it's the kid from Critters.
I mean, it's the same year, pretty much. 96, 97, yeah. Within a year of each other. It's annoying when you Google Titanic, the film isn't the first thing that comes up. I don't know why I thought it would be.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's a bigger story than just the film.
But although, remember when they did the anniversary of Titanic and there were loads of people, there's kids that came out of the woodwork going like, oh my God, is that based on a real story?
Oh,
thinking that it was just a fictionalized tale that James Cameron had put up on screen.
Like Avatar. Like, Avatar's also based on a real story, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
My favorite bit about Titanic, I think it's everyone's, I wait around the whole film for it, when half the ship is now vertical because it's sinking and the guy falls from like the bow of the ship down into the sea, but he hits one of the big pillars on the way.
He hits one of the propellers.
No, because that would shred him.
No, it's because the propellers aren't spinning.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure it's a propeller anyway.
Planes don't have propellers. Sorry, planes have propellers, not ships.
I think ships have propellers.
They have like big exhaust bits.
Maybe I'm wrong. I mean, bearing in mind,
What do you think propels the boats along?
I haven't seen Titanic since 1997.
The propellers would be under the boat.
Which means I haven't seen that film for 21 years.
On the deck.
That is a terrifying thought.
Anyway, this guy hits the thing on the way down. And it makes
a big clank sound.
And it's really funny.
But also, similar to that, I've not seen Romeo plus Juliet since 98. I think I watched it in English class. I didn't think much of it. But I'm not the biggest Shakespeare fan. I find it very hard to get into Shakespeare stories. I've been to see several Shakespeare plays. I've acted in Shakespeare plays, but I find them very difficult to get on with. I've had to study them lots.
The remarkable thing about this version is that it is, you know, a very up-to-date version set in mid-90s Los Angeles, kind of based around Italian warring crime families who have emigrated there. And it is all in verse. It's all the original script. Screenplay?
Yep.
Shakespeare wrote the screenplay, I guess. Yep. Was he nominated that year? And it takes me about 10 minutes. It's 10 minutes of what the hell are they saying? Oh, I recognize that line. What and are they saying now? And then you're like, boom. It's like you slip into another language.
Mm.
It's just sonorous and nice to hear people speak in Shakespearean verse. I think it's nice. And, you know, always pop for those spots. Romeo, Romeo,
Wherefore art thou, Romeo? That's one of the things. Like, that's kind of pop culture lexicon, really,
exactly.
Isn't it? Like that bit of phrasing.
A plague upon both your houses.
The only time I've ever really enjoyed Romeo and Juliet is when they do it in Hot Fuzz, which I think is exceptional.
Which bit do they do in
Hot Fuzz? It's where they go to the Amdram play of them doing Romeo and Juliet, but it's really badly acted.
Yeah, but this is very good. It's a very good film.
And they wake up and they all go, love me, love me.
Oh, yeah. But Romeo plus Juliet is a film that was definitely made in 1996.
And not just because of Leo's floppy hair.
No, just because of Baz Luhrmann was on full Baz Luhrmann mode. I just got to Hollywood and everything's going to be like an episode of Cribs. Slow-mo. Really great set design. I won't say any more about the theatrics around it, because that's meant to be a surprise.
I don't think I've seen a Baz Luhrmann film that I liked.
Hey, not everyone has to like everything.
No, I was thinking more for myself, because I certainly didn't like Great Gatsby.
What about Australia?
That's very long.
It is long. It's an epic.
I'm pretty sure I'm still watching it. Mm. And that is a very, very long
film.
I'm
still watching SummerSlam 2016.
Oh, bringing it back to wrestling. Like it. Can I quickly tell you about the play I went to go see?
Oh, yeah.
So I
went saucy play. The live on stage sex show.
Well, So that's what it was almost marketed as, really. And a lot of the reviews were just like, I mean, my wife told me this, when one of the reviews she read was like, you will want to go home and just F everyone when you get back. Apparently that's like literally one of the wordings of the reviews. I don't think anything could be further from the truth. It is about as unsexy as a play can get. Because this is about two people who are just in the most toxic relationship.
Oh, yeah.
Where they just rag on each other for 2 hours.
Keep
just
going.
Insulting each other. And then another person comes in and they just rag on them as well.
Oh.
It's just a lot of just... It's basically... I described it as... two C's being C's to each other when I walked out. I don't know if I liked it. I don't know if I enjoyed it. Am I glad I saw it? That's a different kind of question. But I like all these 5-star reviews. I'm like, what were you watching? Because it's broadly fine at best. It's well acted, but it is just so... At the end of it, you're like, I'm not sure why I watched it.
You know what the problem with plays is sometimes?
What's that?
They're not movies. It's a lot more fun to watch all the different angles, right?
Well, part of the play is because it's set over like one long night while one of the female character's sister is in labour in a hospital, and so she's constantly there checking her phone for texts, and they're just being seized to each other and all this sort of stuff. But to show transitions of time, they have a clock up on the set, and when they'll finish a scene, the lights will sort of dim down a little bit, and one of the actors will walk over and just move the clock hand round to sort of show the passage of time, and you're like, well, that's so uncinematic.
Could you not just have it in someone behind the set and twiddle that?
I was wondering, I was like, yeah, it's really weird when watching a play and you do end up watching the actors essentially move the set around and kind of pick stuff up and move things. And then you're like, oh yeah, I'm watching a play, aren't I? It's not as immersive as a film, is it?
What did your lady partner think?
She was in the similar vein. I think she probably thought it was going to be sexier as well, and it certainly wasn't.
The Owens didn't get home and...
we went home and we had I had pie and chips from our local chippy, and we watched Fresh Off the Boat, which I enjoyed much more. You ever watched Fresh Off the Boat?
It sounds like a semi-racist Kent thing.
It is a show. So it's a comedian.
I'm from Kent, so I can say that.
It's a comedian called Eddie Wong, whose family emigrated in from Thailand, and they were living in DC and then moved to Florida.
Oh, I've never watched it, but I've heard of it. Yeah,
yeah, it's so funny. Like, and they're giving me American listeners to this, they'll be like, yeah, about time you're talking about this, because it came out in 2015. We've only just got it here in the UK, and it's very, very funny. I enjoyed that so much more, and I think my wife did as well, because she was not that keen on the play either, because she was like, there's just so little redeemable about the characters that after a while you are just like, I just don't want to hang out with you anymore. And it's just so unpleasant.
Sometimes that's workable, though. You can have these fascinatingly horrid characters.
I think so, too. But it
has to be done right.
It has to be done right. People need to learn things. And at the end of this, people don't really learn anything. And at the end of it, I was like, cool, so what was the point? Like, this, it felt like this play was just an excuse for this writer. She just wanted to just write lots of curse words and put them out on a play.
That's how King Ross does his reviews. So the great thing about this is, because this was your lady partner's choice to go to that, that means you've kind of got one in the back pocket now.
Yeah.
Because she took you to something that wasn't as good as you thought it would be.
In all fairness, she did pay for the tickets, though. So,
well, but next time, if it's like, oh, but it's Luke's turn.
But I technically did that last time, because I dragged her to see the Twilight Zone stage play that they did. Which,
well, now it's your turn, so that's good.
Technically was my birthday present. So I'm not sure I dragged her to that. I just wanted to go and see it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, should we get on with the show? But we've got a lot to talk about. We're going to be talking about Dean Ambrose's return to Raw and what could be next for Mr. Ambrose. And then we've got your crap gimmicks and mailbags. Mailbags? Mailbag questions. Here's the show.
Well, we've recorded loads of stuff already today, so we feel a little bit silly. And I guess now's a good time to say you'll be off for 2 weeks.
I will be, yes. I'm not going to be here at... Well, I mean, I've got the SummerSlam predictions video that's already gone up. Sorry, I'm talking out of time because we recorded that yesterday. But this is like my last day of doing Wrestle Ramble stuff, because I'm going on holiday as of tomorrow.
Yeah.
I'm off to Canada for 2 weeks on my honeymoon.
Going to visit the dungeon?
Yeah, that's on the... Well, actually, we are going to Calgary.
Winnipeg's the place.
Is that where the
Well, no, Calgary is the dungeon, but Winnipeg's Jericho, Omega.
Certainly is.
My mate, my best friend Don Callis.
So, but
got
we're
a
not
date with him on Wednesday.
Fortunately, we are not going to Winnipeg. We are going to starting in Vancouver, and then we are going to be touring around all the national parks, camping and hiking, which is going to be very exciting. We'll do a whitewater rapids,
but no impact.
No impact while I'm there, I don't think. And then we're going to end in Calgary, spend an evening there, and then we're flying back to Vancouver for a couple of days R&R before we go home. And I'm very much looking forward to it. So I've got 2 weeks off.
Yes.
Which means, actually, I'm missing SummerSlam. I'm also missing NXT.
But you'll be back for Wrestling MediaCon.
But I'm back for Wrestling MediaCon, which is the key thing.
So, Dean Ambrose, I guess you won't know, you won't get to find out the answer because they don't have wrestling.
It's not available.
Yeah, Canada's not a big wrestling place, is it?
It's not available in the state. In North America, it's not really a big thing, I don't think. So I'll try and find out if I can what's happened.
But he returned on Monday's Raw in Seth Rollins' corner. So it looks like SummerSlam, the match for the Intercontinental title, will be Seth Rollins versus Dolph Ziggler with Dean Ambrose and Drew McIntyre in their respective corners. But what happens after that match? Possibly what even happens at the end of that match.
Well, exactly, because he has returned with a new shaved head and a buff attitude.
Not a shaved head, but a very trimmed down
Well,
head.
It's compared to what he previously had, yeah.
You can't call him the lunatic fringe anymore.
You cannot.
It's a lunatic short back and sides.
But yes, he's got a new look about him. He's a bit more buff these days. And a lot of people said, like, God, he looks like a heel. Like, he's already come back looking like a heel. Yeah. And so that's the posing the theory. Is he going to turn heel at the SummerSlam match? Or are they going to save that? Are they going to do a program with Rollins and Dean heading into Hell in a Cell? What's next for Dean Ambrose? What are your predictions for SummerSlam outside of the SummerSlam prediction video we posted yesterday?
Well, it's essentially the same. And that is, I believe, just because the reports last year were all about Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins working a program together going into WrestleMania. So you had this wonderful story, one of the best in recent times, of Rollins and Ambrose finally making up. Rollins kept on doing all these things to get to win Ambrose over, and then they finally team up. They win the tag titles at SummerSlam. They defended a few times, and yet apparently the long-term reported plan was for Ambrose to eventually turn on Rollins and Ambrose be a heel heading into WrestleMania. But instead, we got that Finn Balor, Miz, Seth Rollins three-way. Which
yes.
Kind of thrown together in all the injury chaos. Because then Seth's other tag partner, Jason Jordan, also got injured.
Yeah, which was the other rumoured match they were going to do. Because they were teasing all of these Jason Jordan heel turns before he got injured.
Mm.
Then he got injured and then they were like, cool, now what do we do with Rollins?
But Jason Jordan was only a replacement for
Dean Ambrose. Yeah.
Of course, it was... Man, who actually injured him? Was it the Bar? Yeah, because it was the Bar versus Rollins and Ambrose. That was the feud that was going on.
That makes sense.
Yeah, yep. So I guess...
WrestleMania feels like a long time ago.
This is Royal Rumble we're talking about. This is January, January.
It was funny. I was writing up the news today about Brock Lesnar's WWE future, which is apparently up in the air. Apparently the story is that he's going to be having a meeting at 4 o'clock before SummerSlam to discuss where he's if he's staying with WWE or not. That's the current rumour.
That is great negotiation tactics.
Absolutely.
Because everyone's going to be panicking.
It's what Warrior did, man. Yeah. Warrior waited until the day of the show before going like, oh, can you give me more money or I'm not going out? It's like, oh, I've already advertised a main event. Yeah.
And Vince McMahon and WWE, that's such a dastardly tactic. We would never do any dastardly negotiating tactics.
What was the point I was making? Oh, yeah, so I was talking about Brock Lesnar. And I was like, all of his televised matches this year have been against Roman Reigns. I was like, WrestleMania, the Greatest Royal Rumble and SummerSlam. And then all of a sudden in the back of my mind was like, oh, did he ever match the Royal Rumble? Yeah, who was it against? Oh, yeah, it was a Braun and Kane, wasn't it? Because they did all the wacky, like, and Braun had his hook that he got from Zelda.
Yes.
And pulled the stage down. I was like, that feels so long ago.
Well, wrestling fans' years run from WrestleMania to WrestleMania.
We do, everything goes in big dog years.
Yeah, big dog years. I mean, you can't have something with the Bar, really, because they're on SmackDown, unless there is another superstar shake-up trade after SummerSlam.
Yeah.
But, I, you know, that would be useless because the Bar haven't done anything on SmackDown yet. So why trade them back 6 months after you sent them to the Blue Brand? So, yes, that's... I think Dean Ambrose is going to turn heel sooner rather than later on Seth Rollins. I personally think it's going to be during the SummerSlam match when Drew is ejected from ringside and you think that Rollins has it won, but then Ambrose interferes on Ziggler's behalf.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm thinking too. And then you set up a Dean versus Seth feud going into Hell in a Cell and then post that into Survivor Series.
TLC, Evolution, the pay-per-views are.
We're not getting a quote-unquote regular pay-per-view in October. We're getting Evolution instead.
A bloody gimmick pay-per-view.
Bloody gimmicks. Bloody women.
Yeah. Hell in a Cell, gimmick. Royal Rumble, gimmick. Women,
gimmick.
It's a gimmick. Being facetious, of course. Don't take these. Please do not take those out of context.
Absolutely.
As a clip.
Yes. So you then play that off into Survivor Series following that, I guess. I mean, unless you want to kind of hold off on the Dean turn and then kind of redo your WrestleMania plans you had for this year, but do them at next year's Mania instead.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't be opposed to that. You have a Rollins Dean sort of tag team feud against Mac and Dolph, and that would be a great way to reassert Raw's tag division.
I was about to say, look at that, a much better tag team feud than what the tag belts are over at the moment. But I was imagining, like, imagine the B team coming out and they're celebrating B team, rah, rah, rah. We're looking for new challenges. Rollins and Ambrose come out and just win the belts.
That is a great Monday after SummerSlam.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, great Raw. Like, we're talking like it's already happened. And then you can have that. And I think the Revival would be a great act with those two teams. And you can have this great three-way feud in the tag division. And then, you do the plans that you couldn't do from January to March this year with the eventual Rollins-Ambrose turn. It's an interesting one because usually you would want someone to come back and stay in that, like, with that momentum for a while. So the great example is Seth Rollins. Seth Rollins came back after that injury as kind of a awkward tweener heel babyface. I'm still with the McMahons.
Such a terrible decision.
Terrible decision.
Terrible.
And that really derailed him. So he should have just turned face. But with Dean here, it's like he got such a big pop on Monday, and I'm so into the Ambrose Rollins thing again. Well, do you really want to waste that? Because you've got, like, that's got a few months of potential in it. And do you waste that just to turn him and have a big moment at SummerSlam?
Yeah.
When really, you could get more mileage out of this by keeping them together.
That's what I'm saying, man. I wonder if it might be in their best interest to hold off on this because he has just had this return. As you said, the pop was massive for him. And I've seen a lot of people criticize the return in terms of they should have done it at SummerSlam as a surprise. But I thought the way they did it on Monday was like as close to perfection as you can possibly get because it was so well orchestrated. And the way that Rollins ramped up the crowd, then didn't announce him, then ramped them up further, then announced him, and ramped them up even further. It was just spectacular. It's one of my favourite moments of Raw of the year. I thought it was a really, really cool moment. And them doing the fist bump in the ring, I thought it was awesome. So, with that, I do kind of want to see them stick together for a little while. And talking about them going back as a tag team and reigniting that Raw tag team division, that does excite me because if there's one thing I couldn't possibly care about less on Raw, it is their tag team division. I think I care more about Bobby Roode and Mojo Rawley than I do
Let's not go crazy here.
I'm not talking hyperbolic statements, but I think I like Bobby Roode. And so I think I'm more invested in Bobby Roode versus Mojo Rawley
than
I am.
The Revival and the B team, whatever they are, do elicit a response. Say that about me. I don't even sing along with Glorious anymore.
Oh, maybe you're right. Maybe I'm too nostalgic for Bobby Roode as opposed to...
But that's not saying, hey, the Raw tag division's better than you think it is. It's more an indictment of the undercard booking and the fact that Bobby Roode is even in the undercard.
I do care about the Raw tag division than I do Authors of Pain versus Titus Worldwide.
So that's another team that is just sitting there waiting to be used in a better program.
It's funny, I was doing...
Revival, Authors of Pain. Authors of Pain versus Rollins and Ambrose.
Yeah.
That's a feud.
So we've got a video that's gone up today on WrestleTalk. I think it should have gone up before this, which is like five matches that you should watch. Five NXT matches from Brooklyn shows to get you excited for tonight's NXT TakeOver Brooklyn. And I was going through the matches and it was Revival versus DIY. And what an awesome match that was. And it was Authors of Pain versus Sanity from last year's Brooklyn, which was this chaotic match. It was so enjoyable. And I had like Banks and Bayley and all this sort of stuff. And every time I was watching these matches, I was like, God damn it, man. Like, you're sitting on a gold mine of stuff here.
But open goal.
Open goal. But before we move on, actually, have you got any thoughts for TakeOver? Because you weren't part of the predictions.
Just that I very much am looking forward to it, and I can't wait for everyone to go, oh, that was much better than
SummerSlam. Yeah.
I was going to say, there is one other possibility.
Oh, please do.
Which I don't think is going to happen, but it's worth having a talk about. Because if Roman Reigns wins, and we all expect him to.
Well, we predicted he will do.
Yeah. But barring Brock Lesnar doing another swerve thing, good God, I hope that doesn't happen. And Reigns doesn't turn heel, which is also a strong possibility. Then he hasn't really got many top heels to face off against. So who are your top heels on Raw?
Jinder.
Yeah.
And Kevin Owens. Probably those two, really, because there's no one else.
And they have been solidified in the mid-card for me. And I guess the cards in the future are Owens versus Roman Reigns. And they've got great chemistry together. They've had some really cracking matches in the past.
They're a Royal Rumble match.
Yep.
Not last year. Well, it was last
2017
year.
2017 was really
awesome.
Good. Just that chair spot of all the chairs.
Oh, I know.
But the rest of Raw's upper card is Bobby Lashley. It is Seth Rollins. I mean, maybe a Drew McIntyre could be a good challenger, but he's still finding his feet on the main roster.
Baron Corbin, I guess. He's tall. He's got a shirt.
But a heel Dean Ambrose, like, he would have to turn heel fast, have a feud with Rollins, and then Reigns has a big heel challenger in Ambrose with a pre-existing storyline there.
Well, if you are going to go in that direction, which I certainly don't think is the worst thing, and you want to kind of build a big WrestleMania match, maybe the WrestleMania match they want to build to is that Shield match of Roman versus Dean versus Seth,
yeah,
for the Universal Championship. And that's like your big draw for Mania next year. What an act that has been so protected in WWE. It's amazing. They can do it when they want to. It's amazing how well they're protected to the Shield.
But even then, not perfectly.
Not perfectly, no.
Not perfectly.
When Kurt Angle came out as Dad Kurt Angle.
Oh, bless him.
Bless his heart.
Hey, Roman had food poisoning and a bad tummy.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
It's time for some of your crap gimmicks. Now, if you're new to this show and you're wondering to yourself, what the heckins is a crap gimmick? It's a little section we do on the Saturday edition of this show where you, the SWAF Nation, submit to us your crap gimmicks for our approval and see if we want to sign them for crap gimmick wrestling. Such suggestions have been like the Beastmaster, WrestleBot, the Fishmonger, etc, etc. Think 90s WWF, you are a wrestler and a blank. Would you like to hear our first suggestion this week?
Hit me up!
So this came in from Matthew few bills on June 29th. As always, I am slowly working my way through them. If you would like to send a crap gimmick in, it's luke@wrestletalk.com. One more time, luke@wrestletalk.com with the subject heading crap gimmick. So this one comes in from Matthew Bills from June 29th. He has suggested Joe Kerr. He is a wrestler and a stand-up comedian. Like Elias, he performs random shows. However, instead of a guitar, he is singing... Instead of playing guitar and singing, he performs stand-up comedy and makes fun of his opponents slash the audience. This is also how he starts feuds. His finishing move is the funny bone, which is an elbow drop to the opponent's elbow.
That's good. I like the idea. I can't think of a sort of stand-up comedian gimmick in WWE or anywhere else. Oh. No, I meant like a successful stand-up comedian.
Sorry,
that was mean.
That was mean. He was on the roast, which was not funny at all.
Well, so I like this. Funny Bone is a good name for the elbow drop. I like that. But I hear Joker and I think the punchline.
Yes. I was thinking of Funny Bone. I'd have thought like a submission on your Funny Bone. Because when you hit your Funny Bone, that hurts for a while.
And the person selling it will go, Yeah, that could be quite funny. And yep, so the punchline in my head is an Okada-style rainmaker, but into a punch.
I like it. Yes. Yeah, I think that's better.
Also, there's like that his entrance should just be on the Titantron. We've got a big budget for the crap gimmick wrestling roster. It's just a fake brick wall.
I was going to say the exact same thing with like a spotlight on it, and he comes out almost like Jerry Seinfeld.
Exactly.
And he's like, what's the deal with airline food?
But they're not funny.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, boo. And he goes, hey, don't hate me. You know, there's some little bits there. And then, bow, 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 bow. Yeah, so he wins a match, and he just looks up and like that at the camp.
But now we're moving into sitcom and we're moving away from stand-up comedian.
That is a sitcom about a stand-up comedian.
It's very true.
I think that's fine.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, that wasn't in your pitch, though.
No, that's all stuff that we've come up with. And that would be my feedback to Matt.
It's three lines.
I think there is a balance that one needs to hit with a crap gimmick submission, because sometimes I get them that are like Matthew Bills that are like three lines long, and then I get some of them that are two pages. And like that's far too long. Maybe even half of that is too long. There is a sweet spot that you can find.
A crap gimmick is exactly as long as it needs to be, because accepted one that was about 14 words.
It was a haiku.
Oh.
One of my favourite ones.
Beautiful, brilliant one.
So this one comes in from Jay King on June 30th. Skate, SK8, is a male wrestler who is also an amateur skateboarder.
Oh.
I like it because we get this a lot where people say like Skate is a smaller man, around 5'6", 5'7", with no facial hair. I just always like that. It's like, he's a smaller man.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess you want to, they don't want to say 205 live.
Well, I mean, just smaller man just seems like a really weird phrase, because he's only 3 inches shorter than me, and I don't think I'm small.
Well, in WWE standards, everyone's looking at this like Vince McMahon, maybe.
Maybe.
I'm going to be 6'3".
Maybe. So he is a smaller man, around 5'6", 5'7", with no facial hair and a blonde bowl cut for a hairstyle. He wears t-shirts from random bands and wears khaki cargo shorts. Also wears elbow and knee... You look at me. Did you look at me then? You would...
It is remarkably similar to what you're wearing.
It is, yeah. I mean, I still have the blonde bowl cut. I mean, I'm more or less on a bowl cut at the moment because I still haven't had my hair cut after 2 months.
And you did skateboard into work today.
I haven't skateboarded in 15 years, maybe.
Were you ever much of a skateboarder?
I was back in my teenage years. Yeah, I used to go down to the local skate park and things
cool,
like
man.
That. Yeah, oh yeah, it was cool, man. We were so cool.
What tricks could you do?
Oh, I could do all the tricks. Yeah, I mean, you name a trick, I could probably do it.
Well, when I was finger skating, I could do a lot of little bits.
I mean, a lot of my skating, pop shove-its were my, you know, things like kick flips, things like that. It's more or less, I wasn't Tony Hawk or Bam Margera or anything like that.
I like when people in the comments section think, oh my God, I don't think anyone's ever asked Ollie this before. Hey, Ollie, are you any good at skateboarding?
Why do people ask you that?
Can you do an Ollie?
Oh, I see. Right, very good.
No. can't.
See, my problem was when I was a teenager, I got sidetracked by trying to learn how to do proper tricks because I was obsessed with Rodney Mullen, who was like a, it was like a freestyle. He used to do just like handstands on skateboards and stuff, and you do flip rounds. Really wicked stuff. Like Tony Hawk Skateboarding 3. I was like, always have to be Rodney Mullen. I used to love unlocking his video because it was wicked. So me and my friends used to focus too much on trying to do that, which we can't do because we're not athletic or strong. So we, if we'd have put more time into, like, you know, doing other skateboarding stuff, we might have been better. But in the end,
yeah, you want to focus on the basics. It's what a lot of trainee wrestlers fall down on. They want to go straight into the flip to do's. Tell me how to do a falcon arrow, a red arrow.
A one-man Spanish fly. Show me how to do that.
Whereas this guy comes in and says, I just want to do 5 weeks on lockups. Just tell me how to lock up, and then I want to do that cool thing where you turn around and you get them in an armbar. That's like the next 3 months for me.
Yeah. I was a foolish child, unfortunately. I went the wrong way.
You ever seen... Sorry, I'm just sidetracking this because it's Saturday. have you ever seen Jiro Dreams of Sushi?
No.
Fascinating sushi documentary on Netflix. and it is, it's regarded...
You usually save this sort of chatter for the podcast.
I thought, screw it. You're gone for a bit. I'm going to miss you.
Oh, sorry.
So this is like one of the most famous sushi restaurants in the world. It's in Tokyo, I believe. And they are so precious about how the sushi is made. You have to do 10 years just boiling rice before you're allowed to cook sushi.
Well, in my one time I've ever done sushi making classes, we weren't allowed to do the rice. Mm. They had to have someone on there who was a specialist who would sort the rice out for us. And then we would essentially just, it was like basically Lego. Yeah. Like that was essentially how that's essentially what our sushi making classes were. But Lego, but with food, edible Lego.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, you can give it a go at Lego. All Lego is edible Lego if you try hard enough.
Try hard enough. Anyway, back to Skate. He wears t-shirts from random bands and wears khaki cargo shorts. Also wears elbow and knee pads and has plenty of sick tattoos. Skate's entrance starts with him skating out the entranceway, then hopping off to give members of the audience helmets while reminding them safety always comes first. After finishing handing out the helmets, he goes back to the top of the entrance ramp and skates all the way down to the ramp, which is set up at ringside, to get some gnarly air and fly into the ring. Kind of like how Sin Cara did with a trampoline. Before he starts his match, he always tries to convince his opponents to wear a helmet, which they always decline. So instead, he puts it on the referee. Yes, the referee must also wear a helmet during his matches. As far as its in-ring abilities goes, his moveset is similar to CM Punk's, where the majority of the strikes he throws are either leg strikes or knee strikes. He has a signature move, such as the kick flip, which is a Pele kick, and a heel flip. And he also does certain spots he'll do, such as dives using the skateboard. For example, he'll throw his opponents over the barricade, set up the ramp, then he skates off the ramp and dives onto his opponents.
Wow.
And he has two finishes. His first is the pop shove it, which is like Cesaro's pop-up uppercut, but with a GTS style knee strike. His second is a submission, the figure skate, which is Charlotte's figure eight. As far as his character goes, as a babyface, he earns everything his way by grinding his way up to the top, but he will always rebel against authority figures and he'll always look out for other baby faces, preparing them for a big match by reminding them to wear a helmet. Now, I've got two main thoughts about this. Well, two conflicting thoughts on this.
Well, shall we say first, great detail, Jay King.
Yes.
That is a well thought out pitch to an extent.
To an extent.
What are your points?
I think the character doesn't make sense.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
He's both safety conscious and a reckless skateboarder at the same time.
That's it, yeah. I wanted this to be more like Matt Riddle, mm-hmm. where he's just like, you know, cool, whatever, bro. But it's not. It's like, it's a skateboarder, but it's also Danger Aaron from Jackass, where he's always wearing a helmet and being like, safety first. And I don't think the two really compute, although Danger Aaron was a skateboarder.
Yeah, I completely agree.
But not
agree.
The most popular member of Jackass.
That's my main criticism of this.
Yeah.
But everything else I really like the visuals of, I mean, this is, if you take out all the safety helmet stuff, this is verging in the category of, no, that's just a genuinely good gimmick.
Yeah.
Because that's like some of the stuff you could do with a skateboard around the ring if you were athletic enough to do those things and transition into a wrestling move. That's great. I would only also add, rather than the figure skate, which is a good pun, it's also a pun on what is already a pun, kind of, because of the figure four and then the figure eight.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bit too far removed. I would have gone for a skateboard stretch.
There you go, instead of the surfboard stretch. Mm-hmm. I like that. Yeah, no, and also, like, the no facial hair and a bowl cut. Like, that doesn't scream skater to me.
Yeah, there's something there, but we just need some development.
Well, let's see if Buttered Toast from June 30th can... Maybe he can get someone signed, or maybe we'll have to revisit two of the other ones we've had.
He's
one of our pledge hammers. Yeah. He has submitted ideas before. He has suggested Count Spatula. Spatula is a Transylvanian grill master who wears khaki shorts.
Oh, that's good already. Why is everyone wearing khaki shorts?
I thought it was really funny. I got these both emails on the same day, and they both had the terms khaki shorts.
It's summer.
Maybe so. He wears khaki shorts, a button-up flower shirt like a tourist, and an apron that says, "Suck the Cook," and a long black cape. He has a dark past that he doesn't like to talk about much. Spatula lost his hand in a bar fight with his mortal enemy, Rob Van Helsing. Which I thought was a really funny pun.
Yes.
He got his missing hand replaced with a metal spatula. He likes to have cookouts at every show, but he has to have it indoors because he doesn't tan well. He invites other superstars from the crap roster to his cook-ins at every show. However, his guests are always upset when Spatula hands them the burgers and steaks that are completely rare, to which he then utters his catchphrase, "The blood is the best part." His finisher is the Burger Flip Powerbomb, just a Sunset Flip Powerbomb renamed. His entrance is pipe organ music.
Fat. Is amazing. It's all a setup for that not even funny punchline of the "but the blood is the best part." Oh, I can. If crap gimmick wrestling on every Thursday night, I feel like it would be
at 1 a.m.
Yeah, I would be waiting around the entire show just for him to set that up and say it. You knew it would come every week, and it's set. Good, I'm done now. I can go to bed.
Yeah, and he would totally have like the Bela Lugosi Dracula voice as well. But the blood is the best part.
That is inspired Buttered Toast, and it's. I just love the ones where you just thought Count Dracula, Count Spatula. That sounds quite funny. Let's reverse engineer this, and you've created this. This is great. This is uniquely. Terrible.
Yeah.
In a great way.
I almost feel like his idea was like, I want to do a vampire, but I can't just do a vampire. Okay, he's a cook. All right, okay, he's a cook. Where do I go back from here? And then you go to say, he lost his hand. It's now a spatula. Rob Van Helsing.
Really, really good. You've gone further down a contrived avenue with every turn. You are, like, this represents the cul-de-sac. The cul-de-sac of no more ideas. You have exhausted this concept into a brick wall. This is supremely good. I want to sign him.
Well, let's sign him.
Count Spatula, welcome aboard.
And if you want to submit a question to our mailbag, all you've got to do is become one of our awesome pledge hammers at any dollar amount. And then you can just leave a comment there in our awesome community we've got over there. And we'll read your mailbag questions out on the Saturday episode. It's a really cool place to do.
And a real cool place to do.
That's exactly what I was
to do.
The problem was, I was trying to hold back a burp in the back of my throat there. I was really struggling at the end of that little plug. And I was like, I'm hoping Ollie's going to step in soon because this burp's going to come out at any point.
And the burp's gone?
It's gone now.
Just swallow it.
Well, it's not as easy. It was caught in the back of my throat.
Okay.
Anyway, carry on.
Well, if you go over to Patreon and become a pledge hammer of WrestleTalk, we are also, as of this recording, 73 Patreons away from reaching our next goal, which is weekly NXT reviews, not just for YouTubers, but for podcast listeners as well.
Absolutely.
It's not something that's Patreon exclusive. It's just we need to get to that level of Patreons in order to fund Fakador's expensive mask habit.
Yes.
And then it'll be you and Fakador doing weekly NXT reviews. How great does that sound?
Doesn't it just? So
people love NXT when takeovers happen and then forget about it for a month. And then they like it when it comes back again.
Yeah, like the week before takeovers, you get a lot of people going like, why aren't you doing NXT reviews? And then the week after, why aren't you doing NXT reviews? And then there's nothing until those 2 weeks come back again.
And that's why we don't do NXT reviews.
Pretty much.
So hopefully this will, you know, this will supplant the demand by having Patreons help literally support WrestleTalk there.
toast. To kick off on the mailbag, we've got Josh Lee, who is asking, "Hi, Ollie, Luke, Ollie, and Laurie. I have a question for the mailbag. It is well known that many of the NXT call-ups, speaking of, get botched and their characters are ruined once they make it to the main roster. Due to this, many people get worried about their favourite NXT stars getting their call-up. With this in mind, I would like you to imagine a world where every single NXT call-up from now on is botched, and each of you can choose one act to save from bad booking and reach their potential. I can narrow mine down to Velveteen Dream, Undisputed Era, Aleister Black, Johnny Gargano, and Tommaso Ciampa," which means you haven't narrowed it down at all. You've just named lots of guys. "But cannot choose just one. Keep up the good work."
Hot damn. Now, you can just save one.
You can just save one.
Which isn't just, like, who has the most potential. It's, like, all the other people you're going to ruin.
Yeah, exactly. You're going to lose them. You are going to lose others, aren't you?
Because the question isn't, you get to choose one. It's just all the others are going to be badly booked. Apart from your one, makes it a lot more weighty. Have you got anyone who immediately jumps out at you?
Well, the first person I thought of was Aleister Black, because I'm such a massive mark for him. But then again, I'm like, but there's also Ciampa, there's also Gargano, there's the Undisputed Era, there's Keith Lee. Matt Riddle's rumoured to be going across. Like, I want to be looking at Matt Riddle being a big guy. There's so many people. War Raiders, there's so many people there that I like. Street Profits are another one. I'm a huge, huge mark for the Street Profits. And I see there's massive potential in them on the main roster, particularly Montez Ford, who I have made this prediction before, will be a WWE champion at some point.
So I'm taking this question to be, how can you find the next Stone Cold, the next Rock, the next someone like that? So I've got to look at NXT as who has that potential. And I, you know, Keith Lee would be my first. That's the first thing that popped into my head out of those. But before you even said it, I thought, actually, no, it's Matt Riddle. I know he's not technically NXT signee yet. Likely this evening he will become one. But I think Matt Riddle already has what it takes to be in the top of the main event of Raw and have that breakthrough appeal to get casual and less than casual fans back into wrestling. So I would go for Matt Riddle.
Yeah, I mean, I'm actually going to... Oh, man, it's tough. But I think I'm going to go with Keith. Because I think Keith's also got that potential that can reach out. Because
that means they're both safe.
Hey! Nameless. You don't actually really leave a name on this. But it says, "Hi, Ollie, Luke, and the untrustable Laurie. Please check
he's
my
totally
last...
totally trustworthy.
Well, he says at the end of it that he claims to have seen him chatting with Pachisi, which we know is not true because he's on the other end of the country and he's here all the time. So we know that's not true. But here is the question he has. 2015 was the year of the Shield breakup aftermath. 2016 was the year of great part-time tag teams. 2017 was the year of the tag team split. 2018 is the year of blank.
Ooh. 2018 is the year. So it's got to be tag, like, or faction.
Does it? I mean, I was going to say, for me, 2018 this year has been the year of NXT call-ups not being used to their potential.
Yeah.
Because I don't really subscribe to the theory that every NXT call-up is botched. Because, I mean, I was thinking about this while watching Raw. I think 90% of the people that were on Raw were former NXT call-ups. Or it might be like 80-85%. So it's hard to say that all of them are botched when you've got that sort of success rate there. But this year in particular, when you think about all the people that were brought up and they've not done anything with... And we're nearing SummerSlam, where you're going to have more NXT call-ups. And because that's what you usually do at WrestleMania and after SummerSlam and sometimes after Survivor Series. And you're like, but you haven't done anything with the ones you've already called up.
None of them are on the main card.
No, you're right. None of them are.
And that goes back to Bobby Roode as well last year. No Ember Moon, no Authors of Pain.
No Andrade.
No Sanity. Andrade is... So Andrade's the only one who's made the SummerSlam show, but it is the pre-show.
Yeah, the Iconics aren't on there.
Yeah.
So yeah,
really depressing.
So 2018 for me so far is the year of NXT call-ups not being used to their potential.
There was a little period where it was thought that 2018 would be the year of injuries with Jason Jordan and Dean Ambrose and Samoa Joe. Just felt like they were racking up. I think 2018 is going to be the year of... The sort of like the Bullet Club and that
outside of WWE, absolutely.
I think and that will like, well, at least the start of it, and then next year will be even more so.
Mm-hmm.
Well, to be honest, 2018 WWE wise is the year of TV rights, but it's also the year of Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns.
And the year of Rousey's rise.
The year of Ronda Rousey. But I think the question is, look, Shield breakup, great part-time tags, tag team split. Like, what's the tag faction storyline for this year?
If that is what the question is, then good lord, I don't even know.
Botched tag teams.
Yeah, botched tag teams, I guess, because they haven't done much with the tag. Mm. Like, Vince clearly isn't interested in tag teams at the moment.
SmackDown's gotten good in the last couple of weeks. They've renewed the interest in them, but, you know, sanity have been wasted.
Paul, I feel really bad for Killian Dane. Clearly told when he's going to put a t-shirt on. And now he's...
Do you not see his tweet?
I did not.
He said, oh, that was my idea. Sure it was. Yeah,
yeah, of course. But I'm doing massive air quotes for podcast listeners. Razman's Reality writes, hi guys, I wanted to get your opinion on this. Thank you for emailing into the mailbag then.
Razman's Realty.
Realty,
yes. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it is reality.
It is. He told us not to read it like a Realty.
Oh, really?
So I just wanted to say that.
Why is it that WWE have such an issue allowing talent to organically get over? The whole heel turn tease with Becky Lynch has upset me so much, not because she's my favourite female wrestler, but because she's so over with the crowd for being so darn likeable, and just turning her back and turning her would be bad booking. Yet WWE seems to think that she might need a heel turn to be interesting. It's not just her either. They waited long to turn Rusev face, Ty Dillinger. I could go on forever, but you get the point. The company used to know that fan reactions determine who and how they are being used, i.e. Stone Cold and Bret Hart's double turn. Now, though, if it's not their doing, they seem to refuse to allow it to happen. As a fan of 30-plus years, it's incredibly frustrating that they can't see their product is suffering for it. What do you think changed, and do you think we'll ever see them turn back the right way? Thanks for the warm welcome back to Patreon. Keep doing your great work, Razman's Reality.
Yeah, so I think it's a mixture of John Cena being successful as a mixed reaction top star. So WWE sees Cena be on top forever, and regardless of the boos and the you know, what did they say? The mixed reaction. Oh, it's a mixed reaction.
Yep, split crowd.
Yeah, he's a controversial star.
Yep.
He still sold loads of merch.
And loads of tickets.
Loads of tickets. The live attendance didn't really fall off a cliff. It just, you know, slowly deteriorated. Same with TV ratings, but that, you know, could be down to other things. So it's that, and realizing that WWE think WWE are the draw, not the wrestlers themselves are the draw.
Yeah.
So they, yeah, I can't really, because they're secure. They've got the TV rights. They've got so much money. The network means that you don't really have to make people want to buy a pay-per-view. You just need to make them want to buy the network. So they don't really need to invest in stars. They can do what they want, really, and we to be honest, like, we're as much at fault as them, because we keep saying we're going to stop watching, but we don't.
Yeah, no, I think it's very much the WWE believe that they are the draw as opposed to the people that are on the poster. So, you know, it's WWE is coming to town, not Stone Cold Steve Austin is coming to town.
Yeah, they won't change unless something really affects them financially, and I can't see that happening there.
And yeah, I was going to say, unless it's like, and we said this in last week's show, unless, you know, Sinclair start putting a massive amount of money into Ring of Honor and get them onto a prominent TV station in a primetime position where they can start drawing in, you know, some new fans, maybe lapsed fans and things like that. That'll probably be about the only thing that will make WWE change the way that they are, because at the moment, they don't need to. Their ratings are fine. Their attendance is fine. But that doesn't matter, because they've just made an absolute truckload of money off of their TV deals.
And Greatest Royal Rumble.
And the Greatest Royal Rumble and things like that. Whenever you see these comments from people going like, WWE is trash and it's dying, you're like, it's so far not.
It's never made
it's
more
never
money.
Never made more money. Like, and that's, you think of like 1998 and 1999, when the massive boom period, they're making more money now than they were there.
By a considerable margin,
absolutely. Hi, Luke and Ollie. This is from Lendl Brentson. Hello, Luke and Ollie, and the oh-so-trustworthy Laurie. Considering this may be his last match, what are your most memorable Brock Lesnar SummerSlam matches? Ooh. With a caveat, other than the 2017 Fatal 4-Way, and I think that's because we really like that. So, to run down the list. 2016 was Randy Orton. 2015 was The Undertaker. 2014 was Cena. 13 was CM Punk. 2012 was Triple H. 2003 was Kurt Angle, and 2002 was The Rock.
Damn. So this is, I mean, like, he's Mr. SummerSlam, right?
Yeah, well, absolutely, because those are very good matches. I actually forgot about the Triple H one.
Yeah.
Really did. But that was about after Raw 1000, wasn't it? The whole Triple H arm-breaking spot and then getting the Kimura over.
Kurt and The Rock, I haven't watched in a long time, so I'm just going to kind of not consider those. The Cena match is great. That's where Suplex City first happened. It was like just mind-blowing as this, because we hated Cena. This was before everyone liked Cena again, us included. We flip-flopped. I hated Cena at this point.
And it's incredible as well, because Brian had won the title at WrestleMania 30.
Yeah.
And then had to drop it through all of his concussions. And they just put the belt back on Cena. So as jaded fans, we were all like, here we go, just going back to the old safety net of John Cena. You put the belt straight back on him. What's the point? And then he had this match with Brock Lesnar. And I mean, for me, the answer for this is the Cena match, because I think this is a real sort of turning point for Lesnar in particular. But it was, I can't remember a match that at the end of it, everyone was like, what happened? Because like they had so many people going, like, you know, Dave Meltzer would talk about it for weeks on end. It was the most one-sided championship match WWE have ever had. Cena got no offense in the whole match. And it was just a domination by Brock Lesnar over and over again. And everyone was waiting for that Cena hope spot, that Cena comeback. And it never came.
Amazing.
And Lesnar just won. It was just a phenomenal match. In terms of, like, you had no idea what was going to happen next. I watched it so many times.
That's how you book someone strongly. Because that happens in the summer in 2014. The next April or March, he ends the Undertaker's streak.
Yeah.
And then that year he faces the Undertaker at SummerSlam, which, like, that's the match they should have had at SummerSlam. Sorry, at WrestleMania. That's a great match too. So I agree, though. Oh, but the Punk match is really good.
Mm.
Okay, I'm going to go with Cena for the same reasons. However, special shout out to Randy Orton, because that was the first time that it was like I took over the WrestleTalk YouTube channel at the start of 2016. And that was like the first thing where loads of people went online going, what? What happened there?
Yeah, that
and because I have made a news about it, loads of people found us through that angle. And the bloodied elbow spot, and whether it was a shoot or real. And yeah, I think that's still to date one of the biggest videos I've ever done. I think it's up to about 1 million views now. You know, the
Brag.
Old real reason Randy Orton was there. And there was the backstage fight afterwards with Jericho and Brock. So that's all fascinating. So yeah, I'd say for me personally, I'm fascinated by the Orton-Lesnar match.
Absolutely. We've got one last question here from Sawyer. I've heard defense... We're back to NXT here. I've heard defense of the poor treatment WWE gives its NXT call-ups that goes like this. No matter what your accomplishments in NXT were, when you join the main roster, you go back to the bottom of the totem pole and have to re-earn your time in the spotlight from square one all over again. In WWE's eyes, even Raw's lower mid-card and comedy acts are, quote, above the last NXT champion because that was just the minor leagues. What do you guys think? Is there any validity to this point? Should NXT call-ups suffer a year or more of freshman hazing, or do they deserve to leapfrog some existing stars and get inserted into Big's time story? Storylines right away. Looking forward to Luke and Laurie's NXT episodes. So am I, Sawyer.
Well, I hope you've financially contributed to that happening then.
Well, he has. He's a pledgehammer, obviously.
Oh, that's great. Oh, of course, yeah. All of them are for the mailbag.
Try and keep up.
So
I know I manage this sort of thing, but yeah, come on.
I would say that there is... Obviously, we want NXT call-ups to be protected as best possible, and they shouldn't have to start at the bottom because they've already... You know, a lot of these guys haven't... The majority of these people haven't just proven themselves in NXT. They've proven themselves on the indies for a decade. So, but that's not to say you can just put people right in. Sometimes, like, because Vince McMahon, I've heard, has that mentality where, hey, you're good on NXT, but nobody knows who you are for the Raw and SmackDown audience. And that's true,
for
the vast majority of fans. So there does have to be some incremental building up. Like No Way Jose, that's probably how he should be introduced at that level. But then with your special talent, with like when the Undisputed Era get called up, I would hope they go straight in and just kill the New Day.
Well, we thought that was Sanity though as well. And it's, I think part of the issue is that Vince doesn't watch NXT. Mm-hmm. And so Vince himself, when he sees these guys and girls come up, that's the first time he's seeing them. And he'll just instantly make a snap judgment on them. So you can almost see that as soon as Sanity came up, he looked at them, took one look and was like, no, I don't get it. And that's it. And once he doesn't get it, then there's no way to kind of claw that back. And it's amazing as well. You made the point there that when they come up, the story is that, like, no one knows who you are. And that is true. The majority of the Raw and SmackDown audience don't watch NXT. It's a very small audience that watches NXT. So the large audience don't know who they are. But guess what? You own the footage. Make video packages. Hype them up. Yeah. Talk about NXT on Raw and SmackDown. Because guess what? If they talk about Raw on Raw and SmackDown, people might buy the network to watch it. So you're kind of, it's a win-win scenario. You're building stars. You're earning money off the network. Everyone's a winner. I cannot fathom. They have this whole thing of, like, people might tune out of it, though. But, like, they probably won't. Like, it's, I think it would be fine.
Yeah, there's that whole mentality of having to pay your dues again, when really, to make the best possible product, you would do what Luke said, and that is introduce these people in video packages leading up to their debut, make them seem like a big deal, and give each person, not just NXT call-ups, but people you would, like Bobby Lashley, or someone who skips NXT. You just want to give everyone the best possible chance to become that next big merch selling, ticket selling, rating shifting star.
Worked with Braun,
worked, like, with Brock.
Like, there are people that they have done it with, but I think the majority of them do get this, like, well, you're in NXT and you're over there, but that's a very small audience, so, you know, try and get over on this stage, you know, bucko. I remember when Emma first debuted, back when she was doing the dancing gimmick. And in NXT, that dance was massively over. Like, everyone was doing the dance, because it always is, because everything gets over in NXT in front of Full Sail. And then she was doing the dance, and WWE brought her up, and she was just doing this dance. And so the larger audience, I was like, what's that all about? But if you'd have done weeks of build of being like, this is what the dance is, it's a craze, people like it, people enjoy it. When she debuted, there might have been a portion of the audience go like, well, I know what that is now, so I'm going to join in.
You just catch, yeah, like it, the Fandango
singer. And it catches on. All of a sudden, then, she has got a gimmick that comes in, and it works. When she comes in and just does it and no one knows what it is, she looks like a complete joke. And then ends up teaming with Santina Marella and gets sent back to NXT.
Sometimes
it's your own fault.
Yeah, sometimes these things work, though, but in spite of that.
Yeah.
Like Enzo Amore and Big Cass, as soon as they made their Raw debut, everyone knew. Well, I guess it was the Raw after Mania, wasn't it?
It was, yeah.
Everyone knew every single line of that intro, and they were so over from the start.
Adam Corona emails in to say...
My Corona. It is Corona, right?
Yeah, no, My Sharona.
My Sharona!
Yeah.
So, for the Secret Cinema thing, I was going, because it was in Verona, I was going, My Verona. And my lady partner said, isn't it Corona?
No.
And I was like, wait, I can't think what the actual version is now. You blocked me.
It's my Sharona.
Yeah, okay, well, there we go.
Yes. Anyway, hello, Luke and Ollie. So I'm just going to preface my reading of this email in that this is in one giant chunk of text, and I do struggle sometimes. For starters, I wanted to say thank you for all of the content. You're very welcome.
Thank
I hope you've enjoyed all of the content we put out this week. I don't have much time to watch all the shows WWE puts out anymore, and your videos keep me up to date without having to spend 10 hours a week watching wrestling and even more time keeping up with the dirt sheet. Now on to my story. So I live in Texas, and every summer I travel with my family to a watering hole called Jacob's Well. It's a very beautiful spring, and you have to reserve your spot ahead of time and wear wristbands they give you while you're there to make sure you don't sneak in. A few years ago, we went there on a hike all the way down the hill to the spring, which is about half a mile, and realized we'd left our wristbands, so my cousin and I volunteered to walk back and grab them for the family. Once we got them, we headed back. I saw my dad walking frantically toward us, and he said, you're never going to believe who's here. And I asked him who, thinking it was going to be another one of our family friends.
Wait a second, so this is a Rusev Hey?
It is.
Rusev Hey!
Let's do
the jingle.
He responded, The Undertaker and Michelle McCool are here with their kids. Be calm.
Oh my God. Nobody freak out, guys. When you know the dad is freaking out the most, he's probably done this really military, like, quick walk over to them. Nobody freak out. Nobody freak out. Just stay calm. The Undertaker and his family are over there. Calm down!
No, you want to talk to him about a Hell in a Cell. Just calm down. So anyway, we're back to the story. My dad is the one who got me into wrestling, so this was big for him also. I've read that a little bit right. I'd read that stiffy. Trying to stifle my fanboyness, I went to go and look and see for myself. And once I saw them, I decided to be fair. I wasn't going to go bother them because I felt it would be awkward if he knew a bunch of fans were watching him the whole time.
That's
we were
very
there.
Very kind.
Very, very kind. Part of the cool thing about the Springs is you can just... Is you can just from a cliff that's... You can
jump from a cliff?
Maybe. You can jump from a cliff that's about 10 feet deep into the water. I think jump is probably right. We watched McCall do the jump. You said you weren't going to watch them. We watched McCall do the jump, and my dad and I were debating if Taker would/could make the jump. This was around the summer after WrestleMania 32.
Did he not push her? Did he not do the Rikishi Armageddon shove?
Oh, mate, you're famous. Your email
will
be read.
The choke push.
Force push. Sorry, where was I? This was the summer after WrestleMania 32, and we'd been in Dallas to see him pretty beat up after fighting Shane McMahon. I decided it was going to be one of the smaller jumps into the water, and when I climbed up, all of a sudden, I see Taker preparing to do the big jump. I try and let him go first, but as a class act, he told me to go right ahead if I could. I tried to include the video my stalker dad took of him, but my phone wouldn't let me. It was awesome. Taker did end up realizing we were fans when he heard my dad mention Hell in a Cell, and I'll never forget as soon as he said those words. The Undertaker looked over at us, and very quickly he made piercing eye contact with me. Whoa. When our two-hour block of time at the Spring was up, I was still debating whether or not I should say something to him, and my dad told me quickly, you're awesome. I just wanted to shake your hand if you don't mind. And he shook my hand and then turned around and climbed off into the forest surrounding the pool. And that was the time I met the dead man. Sorry for being long-winded, and I hope you and Ollie enjoyed, because many wrestling fans of the show I've been to since have. Bonus, I was once at the front of line to get NXT TakeOver Dallas when I felt a hand on my shoulder and heard, "Excuse me, son." I turned around to see Jim Ross behind me flashing his VIP tag to get to the security guards. I proudly turned to my dad and told him he wasn't my father anymore, as good old Jim JR claimed me as his son. It's from Adam Corona, presumably from Dallas.
My Corona. Two things. Mm-hmm. When he said watering hole, he means a literal watering hole.
I thought it was a pub as well.
Yeah,
literally thought it was a pub.
I don't know if that's an American thing. I think it would be. Sounds like an American term that we've actually adopted. But yeah, that's the term for somewhere where you go and drink beer.
Yeah.
But no, but this a sounds literal like, watering hole.
This sounds like a cool spring. I mean, I don't think I'll ever go to Dallas, but if I did, then I would probably seek it out.
Arlington. That's where WrestleMania 32 was, wasn't it? Rather than Dallas.
I just remember that as being the star one.
I actually heard that story before. Undertaker does do the dive, but there's sadly a cameraman down there that he lands on.
Niche WrestleMania 25 reference. Right, so back to Jared Connors' email. Good appropriate time of day, Luke, Laurie, and Ollie. So I was listening to the outro of the SmackDown Live podcast. I felt compelled to share some tropes from the D&D games I've been fortunate enough to be in. One, during a campaign run by a close friend of mine, he led the party to an enchanted house formerly inhabited by a powerful witch. After two of our party decided to search everything to see if it was a trap door, after our half-orc took necrotic damage from a painting, we discovered a box that transported items from where the witch currently was and us. After fighting an ooze, which is from the 5e game, we communicated with our enchantress under our bard, until our bard shoved him in a box and transported him alone to the home of the witch, who was not happy about having an unexpected guest. At this point, I must note, the player was the DM's brother, and the DM did not have a plan for us to put the bard in the box. After much louder and shouts of, "What are you doing? Why?" the DM gained his composure. He nearly killed the bard, shoving him back into the box, and transported him back to the rest of us.
Okay, so, yeah, I don't really know what just happened. This might be like you watching a Shakespeare film.
I think it probably is a bit like me watching Romeo plus Juliet. But to bring things back more to your level, would you like to take a little trip into Poetry Corner?
Well, first, I just want to say before I forget, one of our big five traditions is to have the lady partner predictions.
It certainly is.
And we haven't done it this time round because we had bigger fish to fry. Those fish being the stupid, gaping, stupid people. Of Cultaholic.
Yes.
Yes. So We had a lorry instead. He's our lady partner this time.
So this is from Nikki the Postie from Stakeford. We'd pronounce like two words, Stakeford, so I've already pronounced it wrong. This is Nikki from Nikki the Postie from Stakeford. This is a poem called Belt. She said, I hope it's up to your incredibly low standards.
Oh, I want that inscribed somewhere. Try to live up to your incredibly low standards. Hey, easy wins.
Absolutely. For over 50 years, I've been people's reason for living. My love is earned. It's won. It's never just given. Buddy was my first, the original, my numero uno. Until one night when I met a man named Bruno. 14 years we dated, and he was the always my man. Although flings came from... Deary me, I'm having a bad day reading this. I do apologise, Nikki
the Postie.
It's only
someone's poem that they've really slaved
over. So I'm going to try that again. 14 years we dated, and he was always my man. Although flings came and went with Ivan, Pedro, and Stan. After 77, things were never going to be the same. I met a superstar by the name of Billy Graham. He wooed me... He wooed me, he charmed me, he made me feel alive. Until Ginger Bob came along and he held me against my will for 5. Years which felt like decades, it was the worst time of my life. The Sheik was no better, I felt trapped like I was just his wife. Until one day I met a grand man dressed in yellow and red. He looked him in the eye and confidently said, I love you, brother, and you and me, we're headed to the top. It was a ride I thought would never stop. For 9 years, off and on, we dated, and it was beyond anything I had seen. Me and him together, I was happier than I had ever been. Although I did enjoy my times with Warrior, Taker, Randy, and Sarge, there was only one man in my heart leading the charge. His pythons, his skullet, his glorious moustache. When we split, my whole world fell apart with a crash. Moustache, crash? I think I read it wrong with moustache.
Crosh.
I tried to make him jealous with my new kid, the Nature Boy, but it didn't work, and it was obviously a ploy. Then I jumped between Randy and Nate as I really began to fret. Where do I turn? I turned to this new guy. His name was Brett. He wasn't like the others. He was proud and really cared. I knew things were changing, and this made him a little scared. So I got with a sumo, and he had another fling with Hulk. But Brett valiantly fought with me, and never did he sulk. He won me back fair and square, and although we rose so high, for some reason I had one thing on my ex, that weird ginger guy. After him I wanted a change. I looked for a handsome, big and tall. I met Big Daddy Cool, and immediately began to fall. I still loved Brett, but I'd got a taste for this big boy thing. It wasn't long before I found myself involved with another stupid fling. His name was Sean, and I just had to get around that waist. It wasn't unlike my Brett. In my mouth, he'd leave a bad taste. I couldn't decide who I wanted more, the loyal and steady heart, or Michaels, the man who disrespected me from the start. I couldn't decide, so back and forth, I'd dally. I even slept with Big Sid and the demon from Death Valley. November 97, the decision was taken out of my hands, as Vince screwed my Brett and ruined a lot of my plans. So off he went, and who I thought was the man of my dreams, my world as I knew it fell apart at the seams. So I was left with only one place to go, back to Sean, where this would lead, who knows. I don't know if it's short term or if we'll be together for a while. I just hope this time he's healthier and he can just keep his smile. If this doesn't work, I think I've got a little trick up my sleeve. I've heard of this new guy who's up and coming. They call him Steve. That's part of one poem, as I'll be losing the will to live if I write it much longer. Hope you enjoy it. Cheers, Nikki the Postman.
I was really enjoying it. And
well, Nikki the Postie, I should say.
Then post officer. Post person. I was really enjoying it, but then I thought, wait, this is quite long already. There's 20 years left
to go here. But yes,
and the title changes only increased in frequency in the Attitude Era and thenceforth. Like, you managed to get through like 20 years there by just saying Buddy Rogers. that was very, very good. I really like the way you made the belt into a sort of an actual person, because they do refer to it like, this is my.
Yeah.
This is her, the belt.
Do you know what's weird? As I was reading that, obviously I'd already read the title and I was like, oh, it's a poem about Vince.
Belts?
Yeah, I know. I'd forgotten the title, hadn't I? It was only until halfway through. When she mentioned Vince at the end, I was like, wait, what? And then I was like, oh, it's a belt. Yeah.
In a way, it is about the Vince McMahon family, yes.
At the end of the day, it's always about Vince.
Yes.
Yes. But that is all we've got time for this weekend edition of Wrestle Ramble. I hope you have a terrific weekend. I'm going to be away now. I'm going to see you all in about 2 weeks. What's going to be the state of the podcast for 2 weeks, Ollie?
It's going to go to the bare minimum where there's no intros and outros.
So
it'll just be fun, normal shows. It'll just be the YouTube version in audio form.
So your emails will stockpile up and I'll have a lot of them to get through.
Keep sending them. Keep sending them to Luke.
Ollie is doing the bare minimum amount of work. So just remember that.
Well, you could say that, or you could say Ollie is doing Luke's job too while he's away, while trying to move studios. The intros and outros are one of the first things that go. I'm sorry, but they will be back when Luke returns.
I just feel sorry for the after-swafters, that's all I'm going to say. And the pod-swafters.
They still get podcasts.
But they watch on YouTube, that's the whole point of being out. Anyway, that is all we've got time for today. We'll see you. Well, I'll see you in 2 weeks. The intros and outros will see you in 2 weeks, but Ollie and Laurie will be back tomorrow.
Yes.
Reviewing NXT TakeOver Brooklyn 4. I'm actually gutted I'm not going to get to watch it. I'm going to try and see if I can work it out before I board the plane. But whether my wife wants to do that on our honeymoon is a different matter.
Offline viewing? Does WWE Network allow
that? I don't
think
they do that, no. They haven't done downloadable things yet, which I think is a bit of an error. But anyway, we'll see you soon. Take care. I love you. Goodbye. You want to meet myself and Ollie Davis of Wrestle Ramble fame? Well, you can do just that by joining us at Wrestling Media Con on September 8th and 9th from the Bowlers Exhibition Centre in Manchester, England. Ollie and I will be doing a live episode of Wrestle Ramble as well as signings and photos, but that's not all. Wrestling Media Con will have shows from Cultaholic, Inside the Ropes, Wrestling with Regret, Don Callis, Botchamania, Art of Wrestling, Sean Waltman, and more. There will also be the first ever Wrestling Media Hall of Fame and wrestling shows from Impact Wrestling, where they will be taking on the best the UK has to offer, and Revolution Pro Wrestling featuring the legendary Jushin Thunder Liger defending his British J Cup crown. Tickets are on sale now, so head over to WrestlingMediaCon.com. That's WrestlingMediaCon.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.